Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Hey, everyone. So as mentioned earlier, this is our second episode of the day. We launched an episode with our friend Tracy earlier, and then we also have this episode with our new friend Raghu.
Yeah, Raghu's awesome. We were introduced to him through Zach Schlein, who we had on the pod a couple weeks ago, and I think it's great. We're using this time to talk to a lot of people remotely who we ordinarily may not have been able to speak to because we felt limited by the scope of New York. So I really do think that's like a positive aspect of this time that we're in.
Totally. And we're meeting new people.
Exactly.
I mean, virtually, but we
totally are. Definitely having more conversations than we would normally. So that's been great. To give you a little bit of an introduction to Raghu, Dr. Raghu Appasani is the founder and CEO of the Minds Foundation, a nonprofit whose goals are to educate communities around mental health, to ultimately help heal and destigmatize mental illness. Dr. Appasani is currently a research psychiatrist at USC, and he works with a large part of LA's homeless and vulnerable populations at the LA County Hospital. So he talks to us a little bit about, you know, his journey before COVID and the work that he was doing and his upbringing as well. And then he also talks to us a lot about some interesting aspects of COVID-19 that we didn't even necessarily consider before talking to him. So I'm really glad we got the chance to learn from him.
Totally. Same. I learned a lot from him and he brought up some interesting points.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hey, everyone. We have Raghu on the pod today.
Yeah. And by the way, I know that when we spoke on the phone, we couldn't introduce ourselves. So I'm Liz.
I'm Sarah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, tell us about yourself. How are you doing? And let us let our listeners know who you are.
If you want to talk about your mental health journey, both personally and in terms of like the public work you've done, we would love to hear all of it.
Okay. Sounds good. Hey, I'm Raghu Appasani. I'm a psychiatrist out here in Los Angeles, originally from the Northeast, and made the best decision ever to move here in 2018. I do still miss some family and friends, but overall, it's been a good transition, professionally and personally, I would say. So kind of growing up in the Northeast, there was a lot of, it was nice and the education system was great, but there was a lot of pressure to do a lot and to accomplish certain things and sort of check off all the boxes. And so I think eventually that pressure can get to you, and you start to kind of feel this like I'm not enough moment in your journey, regardless of what other people say around you, of even like trying to provide validation or assurance. It gets to a point where you kind of put it on yourself and you start pushing yourself. And so that kind of happened to me, and it started having, you know, negative effects on me in terms of my health and my, like, I guess the way I looked at myself. Even though I've done quite a bit in context. So with all of that, and then finishing medical school back in Boston as well, I just decided like this is a good time to make a move. It's been a really great decision for my own mental health as well. I think physically being able to be in better weather is good for my mood. Being able to, well, we can't go outside now, but having the option to go outside after a long day of work and go on a walk or a hike is really, really nice as well. So I think that's a little bit about what I've been up to more recently. I also run a organization called the Minds Foundation. It's a mental health organization, and I started that back in 2010 when I was a junior at Wesleyan in Connecticut. And the whole premise behind it was to try to increase literacy around mental health. After spending many years doing research in labs, I got a little bit tired of that, and I went and volunteered in India in a state called Bihar, which is quite poor. And it just exposed me to a lot of healthcare disparities. I had some family starting to go through the mental health care system as well and seeing a lot of stigma. And so for me, I really felt that the root cause of this problem, or rather like any problem, is a lack of literacy and education about it. And so that's how mine started, with this intent of providing education through workshops as well as storytelling, so that people can get a better sense of what mental health is, also like equip them with the language and the vocabulary to be able to express their emotions. And we try to link them with care as well, but it's grown since then, almost 10 years now. And we're doing work across the United States as well. And now with this whole COVID season, we actually did our first webinar on Wednesday that was over capacity. And Fortunately, the technology worked real smooth and it was super interactive.
That's awesome.
How did you get into, like, have you always been interested in mental health, or like, where did your interest in that begin? Was it in India or was it beforehand?
Yeah. I was always interested in the brain, I guess, because it's this sort of mysterious, part of us and part of the world, rather, that we don't know much about. We have ideas about it, we have theories about it, but we don't really know how it works. And at the end of the day, it's so unique to each individual. And so there's no algorithm when you approach mental health, right? Like a lot of other parts of medicine, there's an algorithm of how you treat someone, but we don't really have that. And for me, I really, really love, and I've always loved, hearing people's stories and learning what they're passionate about and wanting to help them kind of achieve that. And so that's the type of approach I try to take with anyone I'm working with as well. And so, you know, it's basically a privilege to having gone to med school and then being able to like listen to people's stories and kind of join them and guide them along that journey. And it's almost like we have a responsibility and we get to give voice to those that are vulnerable and might not be able to, and help them actually be a part of our world and our communities. So I've been attracted to it, I guess, for the nerdiness of it, like the mysteriousness of the brain, and then also being able to be present with people and like really listening to their journeys and their stories. I was always attracted to that. And a lot of the research I've done in the past has always been in sort of that neuroscience and like mind brain and consciousness world as well.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your time in India, like what you were doing there and how it maybe was different or similar to what you're doing now or we're doing in the US?
Sure. So I was actually born and raised mostly in Boston, but I lived in India from the age of 1.5 to 4 with my grandparents in a small village. Wow. So that was my first exposure there. And then when I really started doing work there, what we really do is we hire all locally. So all our social workers and our staff are from local communities. And we actually literally started by going door to door in very, very remote villages, starting in the state of Gujarat, India. And we just try to figure out like what types of issues are people dealing with. And then based off of that information, we designed curriculum around it. So one village might have more substance use, one might have more depression or schizophrenia. So we really tailor our programming towards it, and it's very hands-on. So we train key leaders in the community, like school teachers, village leaders, community health workers, to kind of empower them to then take this information and continue it. And then our staff do check-ins and counseling sessions. And if someone does need a higher level of care, we'll connect them to get free care at a local clinic or hospital. So it's really this like holistic approach to it, really trying to focus. In the past couple of years, we started working a lot more in schools and providing mental health education for children and teachers. And that's been really, really big as well. And then we do research. We're continuously trying to gather data so we can improve our programming. And so that's been the biggest thing there. I will say that the one thing, I learned a lot of things by working there. The one thing that really, really stands out to me that I cherish is basically just the sense and the importance of community and a social structure and recovery and healing. And I think that with that community and social structure, we can reignite just the core features of like what it is to be human, right? So having that empathy and that compassion for each other. And that's something that we tend to lose in a more westernized or like industrialized society. And so that's a huge thing that I feel like was a gift for me to get through my experience there. And so as we started our work in the US, particularly in Los Angeles, where there's like a huge loneliness epidemic, that's the lesson that we're able to bring back, and we're trying to like reignite in other areas that we work.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, honestly, when you think about it, what we're trying to do is like make people feel less alone. And I think, you know, just from what we are, I mean, what we're experiencing now is really unprecedented. But I think even from before, when we were kind of operating, like going to our jobs and living in cities, we were very alone. Like a lot of Western people are very alone, going through our challenges alone, feeling like when we're having mental health challenges that there's like no one around who can help us. So I think that idea of collective healing is really important, and probably one that we can definitely try to, or we should definitely try to like input more, you know, in the Western hemisphere, in the US too. I think now like presents a really interesting time for that though. And I am curious to hear about like, well, first of all, I don't know if we heard like what type of psychiatry you practice now, if it's just general psychiatry, like what types of patients you typically work with, if you're able to speak on that.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm doing my residency training at LA County USC Medical Center and Keck. And so we actually deal primarily with a pretty vulnerable population. So it is the main like general hospital for LA County. So we have one of the largest psychiatric emergency rooms in the country. And so we work there. We also work in an inpatient psychiatric unit, which is down in Compton. And it's a county system. So we deal with a lot of the homeless population, undocumented population, sort of low socioeconomic populations. And so it's sort of the sickest of the sick in some ways, but we also have outpatient care, you know, for more higher functioning patients. And we get a little bit of the higher socioeconomic population when we work at Keck. And so it's pretty diverse. I'm particularly interested in addiction and in therapy as well. So that's kind of where my interests lie. And in terms of, and I'm also really interested in this sort of like clinical mental health phase. And that's, you know, people that might not have clinical depression, but have some symptoms on a daily basis, or these just anxieties that we can work with. I also like that you brought up the concept of collective healing. And we're at a time right now where if you look at the idea of collective trauma, we sort of had it with 9/11, but we never had anything in the history of like the human race where it's this wave of collective trauma, you know, going across the world. And so research hasn't been done in this. Like we've never experienced it before. So it's going to be really interesting and really, really important for us to look at it as a collective, more so now than ever.
Totally. And I think that it's really amazing to see how outspoken people have been about ways to deal with it, because, you know, as you said, I don't think this has really ever happened before. There's no one to blame for COVID. It's just, you know, an illness that everyone in the world is fighting at the same time. So, you know, we love to see, and we're trying to be a part of this too, like opening the floor for people to talk about ways to heal, ways to handle it. Not like physically, but mentally, it takes a huge toll on our mental health. So, you know, I think as a community, we're all trying to learn at the same time, like how to get through this, how to handle this, how to take it day by day. And so, you know, we've been trying to help with that too and help others find ways to cope. I don't think the world's going to be the same after this. And I think it's doing a lot for like mental health, and just people are now, I feel like, really speaking about it more because we kind of have to. And people are really connecting digitally because they have to. So that's been nice to see. How did you begin your company, and like what exactly does like a day look like? What do you guys do?
Sure. So basically I had this experience in India when I was volunteering and had some family going through it. And I mean, quite literally, I basically Googled like starting a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You know, I did my research and I first tried to see if there were organizations out there I could just work with. But at the time, the only mental health groups globally were really focused on like policy and advocacy, or like a standalone clinic. And for me, I wanted to create something that could be scaled pretty widely. And I really grew up with this, you know, this driver that education is really the way to make change happen and social change happen. So that's why I started Minds. But yeah, it was really Googling it, going on like the IRS website, like learning business planning and strategy and fundraising and all of that. The best thing I did was I sat down and I wrote down sort of like my strengths and weaknesses. And then I reached out to my alumni network and people within the global psychiatry space and global health space that could fill in my weaknesses. And I tried to bring them on as like board members and advisors, basically, early on. And so I think recognizing those things were really beneficial. And then I was also at a university where we had resources, and I had kind of the privilege or opportunity to like get a lot of students involved pretty early on. So that's how it started. A typical day for me is mostly pretty administrative. Like I check in with the team. Most of them are in India. We have some here and see what they're up to. We have like a whole schedule. We're constantly writing articles. We're doing updates on social media. I'm doing a lot of grants and fundraising type of stuff. But for me operating it's on top of, you know, my training in psychiatry every day, which is pretty gruesome as well for the most part, especially right now. So yeah, there's a lot of different components happening to it, but it's in a given day, our staff on the ground are in the communities, they're visiting patients and people who come to our programs. We're going to schools, we're taking clients to hospitals. And in Bombay, in the more urban area, we're doing support groups a few times a month, and we're doing research studies as well. There's also a pretty hefty volunteer program where people come and stay with us and do research projects with us or work with us in the community.
That's really special.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I am curious about how the patients that you've been seeing or how your life has changed over the past few weeks. I mean, I think Sarah and I and a lot of the people in our sphere are very well connected and in touch with like the news constantly. And I can imagine that like some of the population that you've seen or worked with may not be as aware of what's going on. If there's a homeless population, I'm curious about how those people have been affected by the outbreak and just like kind of the phenomenons that you've seen in working through this.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. You know, addressing the homeless population first, it's interesting that now in Los Angeles, where we have a very large homeless population, the city's actually providing them shelter, right? Mm-hmm. They're converting hotels and motels and creating shelters for them, which we didn't do before. There's a similar effect in India with migrant workers who have to go back to their villages and their communities, and now the country is providing food and supplies for 80% of them. So, you know, it's like something had to happen for us to really address this population in that way, but we could have done it before, really. So I think if there's a silver lining, maybe it's that we can hold on to that type of giving back and support of each other after this. Getting to your point about like, how has it changed in this population that might not have access to the information as much? So I've actually been working in the inpatient facility. So it's the LOG psychiatric facility for county in LA. And what that means is that typically we want people there just temporarily, right? So maybe a few weeks at most before we send them to another level of care, or it's like a group home or something like that. The problem now is that because everything's on lockdown, a lot of those other facilities are also not accepting patients.
Wow.
So it leads to a lot of, why am I still here? Like, you guys aren't helping me. There can be agitation, anxieties, similar to what we're all facing at home, right? But it's happening to them in a locked facility. And they're kind of being held there against what they want to do. So that's really challenging, to try to work with someone who, you know, you've kind of stabilized, they were ready to move on to the next level, and now they're kind of either getting destabilized or it's kind of interfering with your relationship and rapport with them. That's been very challenging. They do have the TV and the news, but we do try to limit that because similar to how we should all be on a media diet with all of this going on, like we can't just be freaking our patients out in the hospital. So it's been really challenging for me. I mean, I think that it's like a degree in the training I've never expected. Like, how do you explain this phenomenon to someone who maybe has like psychosis or schizophrenia? Or how do you explain it to someone who has OCD or anxiety, right? When the only thing we're being told to do is to wash your hands and wear a mask and stay clean. Like, I don't know. I've never, it's a very interesting time to train. It's an interesting time to live. And it's been very challenging. And I've kind of been go the past few weeks and haven't had time to process until a few days ago. And so I wrote an article that I put in Thrive Global the other day about a lot of this too, that I can share.
Would love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It really is so interesting.
I mean, I think it's interesting because like a lot of the work that I've done in therapy is CBT. So like if I'm anxious, a lot of my anxiety is based in things that are not reality. And so like I work with my therapist to say, well, I'm nervous that, you know, this bad thing is going to happen and I'm going to lose people in my life. Like that's something Sarah talks about as well. And right now it's a little bit scary because it's like a lot of the work that therapists may often do is working with people who may have anything from small anxiety to delusion. And like, I think it's really hard because we're actually dealing with something that a lot of people don't have the answers to and can't necessarily walk patients through. But I mean, we're not experts obviously, but I think like things that have helped us include like being present and being grateful for like being able to stay in place and knowing that we can control like what's in our immediate space. So like if we stay inside and like continue to take actions to not like infect other people or infect ourselves, that like that's what we can do. And that's doing a lot. But it's really challenging. And I can only imagine that it's like, it's probably, I mean, people are always talking about like the healthcare workers and how much they're kind of like putting themselves out there. And we always say like part of the equation that's missing here is talking about mental health. So like, I think you're in the same space because where people are constantly talking about the doctors on the front lines, like caring for COVID patients and you are caring for the population in a different, but also really important way. So I'm curious how you've been able to like take care of your own mental health, if at all, if like you said, this was really challenging. So what have you been doing to kind of remind yourself to like, you know, that it's going to be okay or talk yourself through a tough day?
That's a great question. And always a difficult one to answer, I will say. The one thing I'll say also is that depending on how this whole COVID situation goes, and this is already happening in New York, even though we're primarily trained in psychiatry, we do have training in medicine and other fields. And so we've already been told that there's a potential we could get pulled in to do more of that care, depending on how things are going. But I do want to make a plug that, you know, I think the governor of New York, as well as I know LA County for sure, they've really incorporated mental health and have put hotlines out there. There's also a free hotline of volunteer psychiatrists for other doctors to call in, actually. And so I think mental health is being acknowledged in a pretty strong way right now. Obviously we do need more of it, but, it is really tough for the frontline workers. It's people who've never dealt with mental health or anxiety who are also dealing with it now. Right.
Yeah.
So they have the language to describe their emotion. For me, in terms of caring for myself, this past year I started meditating pretty regularly, and that's something that I've actually increased more so in the past few weeks as much as I could. Because it helps me just take a moment to pause, for the most part and kind of just get my sympathetic drive, halted and just like chill out in a way. And it also helps kind of just relax all those muscles that we don't think about that we're carrying a lot of stress and negative emotions in. So that's something I keep up with now. And then I do a lot of yoga as well. That's something that saved me in many ways, in medical school. I had a pretty bad like anxiety moment and took a few weeks off, and I just got really back into yoga, and got back into the rhythm of it, and it basically like saved my life at that time. So it really helps me stay grounded. And then, you know, in this article, I write about the fact that for those of us that can, it's kind of a privilege to have this time, right? While the earth is under repairs and we're kind of leasing space from it, we can then stay in our homes and try to figure out, okay, what are things that we value in ourselves and in our lives? And for me, I've had a lot of guilt the past year or two about not being as present with my family. Mm-hmm. So this is a time where I realized that that's one of my biggest values, and that moving forward, I want to make sure I stay present. So I've increased sort of communication with them as well. So I think those things have been really, really present, like good for me, is just appreciating what I have and being grateful and expressing that gratitude, totally. Not just mentally or verbally, but physically writing it down helps quite a bit. And going through those when I'm meditating and doing yoga as well, those have been pretty significant for me. But it is really challenging kind of being on that front line in many ways. Right. And, I think the one thing that I really like to tell people is, coming from someone who used to suppress a lot of emotion and not deal with it, the quote that I love to say is, just to remember that, you know, breathing's free. And when we can allow ourselves to actually take that moment to really pause, to really breathe, and to actually feel the emotions that are in our bodies, they're in all different parts of our bodies, to actually pause and feel them, we can then start putting them into motion. And once we do that, then we can actually move forward, right, with meaning, with focus, with purpose. And so that's sort of like the mantra that I've tried to follow, I guess, since it popped in my head a while ago.
Yeah. I can personally say that I absolutely love everything you just said. I'm actually a yoga instructor myself. So I know firsthand how incredible yoga can be for mental health. But what I love about what you said is how you really took the time to think about like what's important to you and what you value. I think that right now, a lot of people are trying to just be like, okay, like what can I do? Like, it almost feels like you should be doing everything because you're home and you're like, okay, well, like if I can't go out there, then I should be taking care of like everything at once. I don't know if, does that make sense? Yeah. Like, you know, wanting to having like a feeling of pressure of wanting to like, okay, like, I guess this is the time where I should like read 5 books or like right. start a blog or do this or do that. But really like at the end of the day, just sitting down, taking a breath and thinking about what's important to you and then choosing one thing and maybe every day incorporating, like, for example, a little bit more family time or even just reaching out to your family once a day. It's like those little things that are helping your mental health, but they don't have to be these like drastic changes all at once. So I really appreciate that because, you know, I think that I personally can get caught up in wanting to do so much right now because I physically can't go out and do right. things. I feel like I have to like change my life while I'm in here, but breathing, first of all, just breathing in itself is really hard to do. Although that sounds, you know, weird to say, it's hard to remember to breathe. So breathing and really like reflecting on what you value is super important. And, you know, I hope that people take that away from this episode and maybe try it as well.
Yeah. And like, I think, you know, you shouldn't pressure yourself, right? So if there's a day you don't work out or a day you don't meditate, totally fine. And there's different ways of meditating, right? It's not just being in silence, it's cooking, it's walking, it's whatever you can do, that's good for you to be mindful and present. So that's something I would just want to stress as well. And like, sometimes you just want to be like, you know what, like, I just want to sit and watch Tiger King for 6 hours. So you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's we actually just posted something today. Today is Thursday the 2nd. Right. We just posted something today about being kind to yourself. And if you want to just lay around for a day and like not do anything quote unquote productive, like that in itself is productive because you're doing what like you feel like you should be doing, not what you think you should be doing. So definitely important. And I actually have been meaning to get into meditation. So maybe this time I will day by day slowly try and pick that up.
If there's anywhere our listeners can find you, learn more about Minds, if you want to take the chance to plug yourself, we'd love to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. So people can hit me up on Instagram. It's just at RAPPASANI. And I'm happy to chat and learn more about MINDS on mindsfoundation.org. It's MINDS foundation.org. We actually just threw up a COVID page. So if you do /COVID, you can go on there for some like really good resources, as well as a recording of a webinar that we did. And we'll have more coming up. And so, yeah, just contact us there. MINDS is also on Instagram with more up-to-date stuff at MINDS Foundation. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
You're
And
welcome.
I think for everyone, just hang in there and breathe and just try to be grateful for what we have and be present with those around you that you love.
Totally.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for all that you do.
Thanks.
We appreciate it.
All right.
Chat soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everyone.
Hello again.
We're back.
That was our episode with Raghu Appasani. We hope you enjoyed it. He gave you some info about where to find him. You can always find us at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod on Instagram, at It's Fine I'm Fine PD on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram at Liz Height, Twitter, Liz Tweets 5. Sarah, where can people find you?
Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. Again, still need to meet her on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Please
All the
go show my
places.
TikTok some love, please. I'm learning these dances. It's not easy, people.
It's not. Just putting in the effort. So you might as well go like it and comment and write FYP on her videos.
Thank you so much, Liz.
You're welcome.
All right. With that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye.
Bye.
I really hope you're all doing okay. Bye.
We love you.